Why would anybody want to do that? So I want to give you an example, and this is an example I've given you before. There's a toy that people buy for babies. It's a hollow square with shapes cut out. And the baby is supposed to take the round peg and put it in the round hollow, etc. Once the baby figures it out, how much fun is it? It's finished. So people like challenge. The greatest challenge is bringing light to dark places. And indeed, that's what Hashem created the world for us to do. Dark places could be external, but the darkest of all places are what? Internal. So by putting into oneself that level of concealment and confusion, the challenge that life presents is far, far greater than it would be previously. So that was Adam's idea. He wanted to challenge himself with himself. So it sounds like a good idea, no? No, a terrible idea. Terrible idea. Why is it a terrible idea? Two reasons. One is Hashem said, don't do it. That's already a very good reason. And the other is, it's great to me to challenge when you win, but it's bad to me to challenge when you lose. So when Hashem told Adam not to eat of this fruit, his intent was to allow Adam to eat of the fruit later. If Adam would have held out till Shabbos, Hashem would have said, and now you could have it. Now you're strong enough for you to be able to meet that challenge. But he ate of it too early. So you may be wondering by this point, what does this have to do with tefillah? Okay, so the problem we have with tefillah is that we've integrated this kind of confusion. What kind of confusion? The source of all evil is ego. The Gras says this. There are two main branches of evil. One is desire, the other is ego. But even desire comes from ego. So let me explain to you how that goes. I deserve it. You should have it. Okay, you're familiar with that? Okay, so that's how ego fans desire. So your ego tells you, be in control of your life. This is the main voice that you'll hear. Be in control, take over, do what you want to do. Now let's talk about external thoughts and tefillah. So here it is. You're davening Shemona Esrei, let's say. You get up to Rifa'enu. Rifa'enu Hashem b'nei Rafa, heal us, Hashem will be healed. Wow, did you hear about Dorit Greenberg? Wow, so terrible. She's going for treatments. I wonder if her insurance is going to pay for all of it. You know, Obamacare... and before you know it, you're where? Sim Shalom. Could that happen? Okay, so when you examine where your extraneous thoughts go, they usually have to do with your wanting to feel, on some level or other, in control of your life or of other people's lives. So there's like the day plan, you're familiar with this? Okay, you're davening and suddenly it's, oh no, I'm not going to have time to have coffee. I really have to make a better plan in the morning. This is crazy, Baruch Aleinu. Okay, our interactions with people. Okay, Sim Shalom. Well, I would like Shalom, but there are people in this world who... Okay, so the extraneous thoughts are there because we are distant. The source of all of the extraneous thoughts are inherent distance, and the distancing factor that's the most harmful is ego. Okay, this is clear? So I'm going to give you three different approaches of how to deal with this. Okay? So the first approach is as follows. Bear with me, this is going to sound counterintuitive to you. Don't cut off the external thought, bring it back to its source. So here you are, you're in Rifa'enu, okay? She's being treated. I wonder if her insurance will pay. You notice that you're somewhere else. Take it back. Yes, and why am I concerned about it? Because I care about her. But I care about her, and I know also at the same time only you, Hashem, can heal her. So let's take it back to Rifa'enu. I'm making a day plan. First I have to do this, then I have to do that. Why do I have to do all these things? What am I living for in the end? And I'm saying, Barech Aleinu, bless everything I do, Hashem. Why? In the end, I want a meaningful life. I want a good life. Take it back. Don't do battles with your extraneous thoughts. And the reason is that you'll lose the battle. So I want to illustrate this to you concretely. Have any of you ever tried meditation? How many of you have tried meditation? So if you're a serious meditator, you're going to try to reach a point where you could clear your mind. Is that true?
Yeah.
How many of you succeeded in clearing your mind? How long could you keep it clear? It's very, very hard to clear your mind, and I want to tell you why. Because we're after the sin of Adam HaRishon, and the clear mind has to do with negation of ego, and we're not there. That's not where we are. So instead of trying to clear your mind and enter a state of absolute bittul before Hashem, which would be wonderful, you take who you are back to Hashem. You take who you are back to Hashem. And the reason why this is counterintuitive is because we say, well, I shouldn't be there. No, you should be yourself. We're in the after the sin reality. We should be where we are. This is who we are. This is where we are. We can either bring Hashem into our lives or we could split our lives into two segments. So bringing Hashem into your real life is sacred. So now I'm going to tell you the source of this approach. Bear with me. Okay, so you're all familiar with this, that tefillah is in place of the korbanos. This is not a new thought to you. And in fact, there's a machloket in the Gemara, which we're going to discuss later in greater depth, about of all of the possible reasons for tefillah, what's the main one? And one of the maskanot is to replace the korbanos. So, did you ever try explaining korbanos to somebody who's not from? Okay, so it's a tough one. It's a tough one. Like, here you are at the kotel, and somebody from, like, a group comes over to you and asks for a prayer book. Do you have a prayer book with English? So you hand them art scroll. Let's say it's for Birkat Kohanim. And you just heard the bracha of Shachris, now we're going into Musaf. And you give her the place. And what's it going to say in Shemona Esrei of Musaf? We can't wait to get back to the Holy Temple in Jerusalem where we could slaughter animals. Seven of this, two of that. Okay. Now let's say she actually asks you, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? So korbanos were always part of the world. So as some of you know, Rambam says that the korbanos, because people have such a strong desire to do what the korbanos do, now what that is we didn't yet speak about, that if we didn't have a seder of korbanos that the Torah mandates, we would end up doing korbanos to avodah zarah. The need is so great. Ramban and others don't like this because they say, wait a minute, Adam offered korbanos. There was no avodah zarah in the world then. It's not just a replacement for something. So what is it? The word korban is of course rooted in the word karov. What does karov mean?
Close.
You could only make something close if it's far. If something is already close, you can't make it close. So the purpose of a korban is to take what's far, far from Hashem, far from your recognition of Hashem, the part of you that yearns for control, the part of you that's full of desire, to take that part of you, which is real, and to draw it close. So how does that work? I'm going to give you two perspectives, and then we'll take it back to tefillah. One perspective, which some of you are familiar with, is what Ramban says, which is, you're meant to identify with the animal. You're supposed to say, Wow, there's something about me that's like this sheep, like this goat, like this cow, like this bull. And whatever's happening to it should be, will be happening to me. This is very difficult. Because we don't instinctively say there's something about me that's like a cow, a sheep, a bull, a goat. Rav Hirsch explains this. This is the second perspective. Basically what he says is, yes, there is. There is. Yes, yes. Okay, so we have, the Balei Musar would say this, we have a whole menagerie in our hearts. We're very animalistic. Very, very animalistic. The animal soul is the instinctive self. The instinctive self isn't evil, but it's instinctive. It wants to take, it wants to survive, it wants to get, and it's very distant. And when you have extraneous thoughts in your tefillah, who's talking? The animal self. So the animal self is not the Yetzer Hara. The animal self could be uplifted. It could be drawn close. So I'm going to give you a brief survey of the different animals that were used in sacrificial offerings, how they were sacrificed, and then bring it back to tefillah. So there were six animals that were used in sacrificial offerings. I'm not going to give you all six. I'll give you two. The sheep and the ram. Okay, suppose somebody suggested a shidduch for you, for your daughter, for somebody who you care about, yeah? And you say, what's he like? And they say, he's sheep-like. Okay? What's your next line? Thank you so much for thinking of her, but, okay, she has a roommate. Okay, so what's conjured up in your mind when you say somebody is sheep-like? What does that make you think of? A follower, no initiative. Okay, yeah, what? Somewhat cowardly, yeah? Okay, so it's the primary trait of a sheep is that it follows. Is that good or bad? So the Jewish answer, this is always the Jewish answer, it depends. Okay, it depends on who you're following and why. It depends. Okay, so I'll give you an example of ridiculous following. When I was a teenager, very high heels were in style. Okay? So I remember talking to my mother. She was like, look at the shoes I would buy. And on Shabbos, I would often walk from where I lived in Flatbush to Crown Heights, which is not such a long walk, but when you have, whatever. And my mother would say, maybe you want lower heels. Those heels are very high. Be a teenager. What's my line? No, they're not. It's very comfortable. Okay, here. So let's go fast forward. So here I am. I'm a young mother. It's the 70s. High heels are out. Okay, it's cool then to wear sandals. Okay, it's like they're out. So I remember thinking, boy, how did I ever wear this? Why was I doing this? What was I thinking? How stupid. Okay. So now high heels are back. How many of you own high heel shoes?
I don't know.
That's called being a sheep. Got it? Do I own high heel shoes? Yes. Okay, so what's the reason? Because you feel good when you do what other people are doing and when they think they're doing something that's cool. You understand this? So that's called ridiculous following, in case you didn't know what it is. But there, and we do this all the time with many things. The worst level of following isn't high heels. The worst level of following is when you imbibe the spirit of the times and feel you have to believe and think what other people believe and think. That's the worst of it. Okay? But there's holy following. What would that be?
The Torah.
Moshe just told us to be ready. We're going out tonight. Tonight? Where? Okay, could you picture saying that one? Where are we going? What do you mean you don't know? With what? So when people said, okay, we're going because we're going, because that's where we have to go, that's holy following. So the need to follow is inherent. It could be holy or not holy. It's inherently unholy, but it could change if you do something to make it holy. So the default state is not holiness in the animal soul, but you could turn it around. That's called making it close. Taking the animal self, which is the source in many cases of your extraneous thoughts, and drawing it close. So the other animal I said I would use as an example is a ram. For those of you who don't know what a ram is, which I discovered last year, I was talking about a ram for 5 minutes, and I realized people don't know what a ram is. A ram is an adult sheep, okay? A ram is a lead animal. Is leadership good? Is leadership good? It depends. It depends. A very interesting... How many of you read the Chazon Ish's famous essay on Emunah and Bitachon? Did any of you read it? You should read it. And if you like Hebrew, you should read it in Hebrew, because in Hebrew the language itself is so beautiful and evocative. But if not, read it in English. So when he talks about Emunah and Bitachon, which is a subject in itself, and I'm not going there, he gives examples of people who are serving Hashem and simultaneously serving themselves and their own egos. So one of the examples he gives is people who, a theoretical person who runs a tzedakah organization. So let's make this person up as the Chazon Ish does. Okay? Mrs. Greenberg, we're sticking with Greenberg tonight. Are any of you Greenberg? Baruch Hashem. So she's in charge of Avas Chesed of Har Nof. There is no organization called Avas Chesed in Har Nof, and there's no Mrs. Greenberg, but she's in charge of Avas Chesed. So what does Avas Chesed do? It sends volunteers to people who are ill, it arranges foods for people who need food arranged for them, and it arranges visitations to the shut-ins and elderly. Okay, sounds good? Okay. Now she's running it. So she has a meeting, and Leslie, who's only like a 22-year-old who just finished Neve, and she's married to this guy who's learning in Or Sameach. She has ideas. She's telling me what to do. Who is she, Bichlal? She has experience with this stuff. She doesn't even understand the Haredi community. Could you picture somebody saying that?
Yes.
Sure. And today she's 22. The chutzpah. So you have to, in a subtle way, put her in her place. She say to Leslie, sweetheart, I know you ran a soup kitchen when you were, like, you know, in college. Where did you say you go? You know, UCLRA or something. Okay, and I'm sure it was very important, and I'm sure you did very good work. And when you become, you know, more integrated to the community, I'll really value your very important suggestions. Could that happen, more or less?
Yes.
Does this happen?
Yes.
It does. That's called worshiping yourself and worshiping Hashem at the same time. That's misuse of leadership. Okay, clear? Do we do this? Now go back to our extraneous thoughts and fila. I have to do this and I have to do this. I'm in charge of this and I'm in charge of that. If I don't do this, it won't get done. And me and me and me and me and me, bring it back. What does holy leadership look like? Okay, I have this fear of telling the same story to the same people. Did I tell you the story of how the Rashash became a Rosh Yeshiva?
No.
Okay. So there are two Rashashes, okay, just to keep things interesting. Okay, there's Rashash who's on in the Gemara, and there's another Rashash who was a Mekubal. They're two different people. So I'm talking about the Rashash, the Mekubal. So he came from Teman. When he was a young man, he had an incident in his life that recalls Yosef HaTzadik. He must have been good-looking. The daughter of the Sultan wanted him and made a reason up to have him summoned to the palace when nobody else was there. So he saw where things were going, and he literally jumped out of the window. It was on a low floor. Now, where is he going to go? He just insulted the Sultan's daughter. So he couldn't go home. That would be the first place that the police and the soldiers would look for him. He couldn't go home. So he went to people in the town, okay, which is called Sharab. That's why it's called Sharabi. And he asked for some money. He said, I have to be out of town now. Give me some money. I just have to go. So people gave him whatever they gave him. And he made a resolution that he would do his best to get to Eretz Yisrael. If Hashem saves him, he'll go his best to live a dedicated life in Eretz Yisrael. So skipping many chapters of adventure, where he went and who he learned with and what, okay, he's in Eretz Yisrael. Now he had made a vow to live a life of dedication. So part of that to him meant totally negating his ego. Dedication means there is no self. I serve Hashem. So what he did was he took a job as a shamash in Midrash Bet El, which still exists. Do you know where Midrash, how many of you know where Midrash Bet El is? Do you know? Okay, so next time you go to Yerushalayim, okay, there's, when you're in the old city, you'll see a sign that says over a certain building that it's the dorm of diaspora yeshiva for women. Mm-hmm. Behind that, there's a smaller building. You could bear, like, it's a part of the building. It's called Midrash Bet El. And they still learn Kabbalah there.
What street is that?
Street in the old city, I don't know. Okay, it's near the center of the, it's not far from the, you know, from the center of the Jewish quarter. Okay, so their main branch now is in the, it's not important, you don't have to know exactly where the main branch is, but whatever. So he was a shamash. What does a shamash do? He serves tea, cleans up, puts away the svarim at the end of the day. And in exchange, they gave him a very, very small salary, and they allowed him to sleep on a bench in the midrash. So the way learning goes in a yeshiva is different than women who listen to a shir. Women who listen to a shir presumably look at the speaker and listen intently. Is that what a base midrash looks like? No. A base midrash is like action. It moves, you know. So periodically in the Midrash Bet El, the Rosh Yeshiva would bring up a question on the sugya being learned, and they would argue it out. And sometimes they had a resolution, and sometimes they didn't, but there was a lot of energy, a lot of passion. You could picture this?
Yeah.
And sometimes the very end was, and we still don't know why he's potter according to Rabbi Yochanan, do we? Okay, clear?
Mm-hmm.
So one day the Rosh Yeshiva came in, and there's a page in his Gemara where he had ended the day before, with a possible resolution that was brilliant. It couldn't be knocked down. So he read it. And he said, who wrote this? This closes every open door. It's amazing. Who wrote it? If this was Harvard, what would happen next? Four people would raise their hands. Okay. But it wasn't Harvard, and nobody raised their hand. And this would happen periodically, not every day, not every week, but periodically, when there was something irresolvable, seemingly irresolvable, there'd be a brilliant resolution. So, and nobody knew who the author was, except us. Okay. So the Rosh Yeshiva had a married daughter. She had a baby. She went back to her parental home. You go home to mommy with your new baby. So one night the baby was screaming his head off, Kamin HaTatino Kot. So she went to the porch and was walking back with the baby, back and forth, back and forth. And she sees there's a light on in the midrash. Like, why is there a light on there? You know, like a light, a candle. At 4 a.m. So she looks carefully through the window, and she saw the shamash putting a paper in the Gemara. So she told her father. So the next day he came in, he opens the Gemara, reads what's written there, talks about its brilliance. And he said, after he finished, instead of his usual question, but who's really writing this? He said, I know who's writing this. And he pointed at the Rashash, and here's what he said. This is the part I want you to hear. You are now the Rosh Yeshiva. And this is how the Rashash became the Rosh Yeshiva of Midrash Bet El. Okay? This, on the side of the Rosh Yeshiva, is the exact opposite of the example I gave you of the head of the Chesed Committee. You understand this? So leadership could be holy if you're leading l'shem shamayim and there's no ego there. Could be very holy. So the idea of a korban isn't to say there's no menagerie. The idea of a korban is to say the part of me that's distant is something I'm going to draw close. So there are four facets to every korban. There are sometimes more, but always these four. The selection of the right animal, which is analogous to when you have extraneous thoughts. Where is it coming from? Which animal is doing the talking? Is it the goat? Is it the sheep? Who's talking? Next, there's a process called smicha, where the person who's offering the korban, the owner donor, has to lay his hands on the animal so that they feel bonded. Now, with yourself, you feel bonded enough. The next is that the animal is slaughtered, and the blood is received in holy vessels, in sanctified vessels, which means there's a resolution now to take the animal's life force and use it l'shem shamayim. The idea is that any animal force could be holy if it's in the right vessel. So you're familiar with Rambam's famous dictum, suppose a person likes bloodshed. Now you hear this, you say, who likes bloodshed? So I'll give you picture a teenage boy, okay, who likes action. You could picture that? Okay, you know, follows ambulances, reads all of the stuff in the media that's gory. Is there somebody like that? Mm-hmm. For sure. So if you like bloodshed, so he says, be a doctor, be a shochet, be a mohel. Don't say, I'll be an accountant. This is not going to work. Okay, clear? And the same thing goes for all of the other animal impulses. You have to hear where your extraneous thoughts are coming from, and you have to redirect them towards Hashem. So this is that. Now there's a final step. Remember I said there are always four steps. At least some of the animal has to be offered and burnt on the Mizbeach. Sometimes it's the entire animal, sometimes it's only part of the animal, which means you have to be able to also force the animal self into submission. You can't be the Rosh Yeshiva Midrash Bet El and at the same moment be the head of the Chesed Committee. You understand this? You have to be able to say no as well as yes. So this is the first view of what to do with your extraneous thoughts. So let's review this. It's to hear them, bring them back to Hashem in the context of the tefillah that you're saying. Now in this sense, realize that when we say tefillah, which tefillah are we referring to? Shemana Esrei. Okay, Chazal, whenever they use the word tefillah, their intent is Shemana Esrei. Okay, this approach is clear? Now I'm going to give you the exact opposite approach. The exact opposite approach, which is what you'll find in the Mamarim of the Baal HaTanya. He has Mamarim that were included in Sefer Tanya and other ones in the Sefer called Likutei Torah that was not included in Sefer Tanya. He says the exact opposite. You catch yourself in extraneous thought and stop. Put the brakes on. For the same reason, if you were dreaming when you were like driving and you notice a child is running in front of the car, you don't examine your relationship to life. You put on the brakes. So his idea there is that your ability to say, no, I'm not going here, I'm going right back, I'm not going to follow it to its core, that negates your ego. So if you could do it, which not everybody can, if you could just stop yourself, okay, that has the same effect, but it's a different path. So it would mean concretely, again, you're in Terifa'enu. Wow, she's going for treatments. I don't know if her insurance will pay. I don't know what I think about Obamacare. Stop. And just go right there. But Hashem, only you will heal her. Don't try to trace it back. So that approach, he says, turns you into the korban. Why? Because you're negating your ego. But this is much harder than the other approach. And I don't know how possible it is for people in our generation to do this consistently. An offshoot of this approach is what you would find in Likutei Moharan, where Rabbeinu, this characterizes him very much. He would say, let's say you have the kind of davening where you lost a quarter of the davening. Could that happen?
Yeah.
A quarter if it's gone, like it's gone. So he's saying, if you lost, let's say, you lost Rifa'enu, you lost Barech Aleinu, you lost Kabbashofar Gadol, but now you're up to Hashiva Shovteinu. So you have to remember, no matter what I lost, what I have in front of me is what I could gain. So don't go backwards. Stay where you are, where you caught yourself. Don't trace it back to its end. Don't negate your ego. Go into the bracha at hand. Why? Because, bear with me, this is not an easy idea. Okay, you're ready for a hard idea? Everything else was easy. We only have one hard idea tonight. Okay. So every day presents its own nisyonos. So today wasn't like yesterday, and tomorrow is not going to be like today. Is that true?
Yeah.
It's true. So what determines what you should do in a given day? Everything that you'll encounter only has one source. What's the source of everything? Every person who you'll meet, every situation you'll encounter, it's all from Hashem. Ein od milvado, right? There's no other address. So it means everything has a spark of connection. You're given the ability, because Hashem knows what you're going to face on a given day. What you'll face is different than what I'll face. Somebody else will face something completely different. You're given the ability to look at every situation, person, whatever, and find the holy spark and uplift it. So when you go to sleep at night, some of us sleep at night, okay. When you go to sleep at night, your soul goes before Hashem. And all of the holy sparks that you uplifted throughout the day, which you had the potential to uplift, otherwise you wouldn't have faced whatever you faced that day, okay, Hashem treasures them and strengthens you. The force of what you did becomes part of your newly adapted character. Let's say you failed. You could have done this, and you could have done that, and you could have done the other, but you didn't. So the sparks were unrealized or corrupted. That could happen as well. And they're also part of you. And you may have to deal with them later on in your life or even in another Gilgal. Okay, this is clear? But they're part of you. So this is clear so far? So if you understand this really, you'll understand why as people age, they become less energetic. Because they've already done most of the work that they were meant to do in uplifting the holy sparks that they're presented with, and they have fewer and fewer things that they have to deal with. This is clear? Yes? No? Okay, everybody looks sick. Okay, and this is also why, if you understand this, okay, since you become strengthened through the force of the holy sparks that you've uplifted already, the real tzaddikim in their old age are very strong spiritually because they have all of this accumulated energy. So this is to some degree reflected even physically. I'm interested in everything. This is one of my problems, but whatever. So I was interested in longevity. So I want to, where do people live the longest? Did any of you ever try to look at, where do they live the longest? Okay, mostly in the Mediterranean basin. Okay, so this is northern Greece, Yugoslavia, Albania, places like that, mostly. And for some bizarre reason, a specific place in Japan, an island off Japan more correctly, and in La Palma, California. Okay. So people don't know what to do with this. The lifestyles of these people are not that identical. Okay. So, but they attribute it to less polluted air, better diet. Okay. Then I want to know how this plays out in Israel. Where do people live the longest in Israel? So the way it works is that a lot of this goes by economic possibility. So the community in Israel with the least longevity, with the worst longevity, is the Bedouin community of Rahat, which is extremely impoverished. And the higher levels of longevity will be in places like Kfar Saba, Ra'anana, with two exceptions. What are the two exceptions? You could figure this out. B'nai Brak and Bet Shemesh. Okay. So this is a great puzzle because you can't look at B'nai Brak and say, wow, they're all on the Mediterranean diet and do so much physical exercise. Okay, this isn't that at all. So there's something about the energizing force of the sparks that were uplifted. What does this have to do with anything, you may wonder very reasonably? So here you are, you're davening, and you lost some of your davening. But the sparks that you have now in front of you, this bracha that you're up to now, you could still realize that. You don't have to give up on it. You don't have to say, oh, this mincha went to pot. You could say, no, this bracha, which happens to be the one, that suddenly I'm back where I should be, that's the bracha that I have to uplift. That's the bracha that I was meant to uplift. That's the most important bracha. So now we have a couple of things having to do with what to do with extraneous thoughts. Let's review this. So one will be, take it back to Hashem. So that way, you're finding Him in the midst of the concealment that He created for you, and you're in the tefillah. The next is, break it off here so you could be mevatel your ego. The third would be, let go of what you couldn't do. Maybe it was beyond your strength for now, but be where you are now in the tefillah. Don't give up. Okay, clear? So you have three different approaches. Okay, so now put all of this aside. We're going to go into a whole different concept. The next concept is that Chazal knew how to bring us back to Kavanah. So all of the halachot of tefillah are there for a purpose, which is to keep you focused. So here are the halachot we're going to discuss. Okay, when to daven, what time, why those times, and where to daven. And there are more halachot than that. We'll start though with these two. If we have time, we'll go into more. First of all, when to daven. When are you supposed to daven? Everyone looks guilty, no one's raising their hand. Okay, first third of the day, right? Ideally the nates, but if you can't make the nates, at least the first third of the day. And if you can't do that, at least till chatzot, because you can't do morning prayers when it's already no more morning. Okay? And mincha you do from what? What's the earliest mincha you could do? When is the zman? It's 20 minutes after chatzot. Until what? Until shkia or somewhat past shkia. So those are the two tefillot that women are obligated in. Okay, and I want to discuss the halachic end of the idea of my saying that there's an obligation. There are two views in the Rishonim about women's obligation for tefillah. Okay, one is that women are obligated in these two tefillahs. Why? Why shachris and mincha? So again, the view is that the tefillot replace the korbanos. I don't want to shock you. Women also have animal souls. Right? You read all these articles about how women are so spiritual, but it's not true. Okay, whatever. We have animal souls. So they gained as much from the korbanos as men did. So because of this, all Ashkenazi posts can maintain that women are obligated in two tefillahs a day, shachris and mincha. The Rambam, conversely, maintains, for reasons that we'll discuss in a moment, the tefillah is a mitzvah in and of itself, and the fact that the tefillahs were arranged as they were in terms of the times is a mitzvah, but the mitzvah of tefillah is separate. And therefore, a person is yotzei tefillah with one tefillah. Could be any tefillah. So let's go back. Why, so we have this. Well, you have to daven in the morning because that's when they did the tumid in the morning. We just went through all these things about korbanos. You want to take yourself and draw it close. Great. Why was the tumid in the morning? Why weren't, why wasn't the Torah liberal? Do it whenever you, feel inclined. Maybe after you have your second latte, okay. So the idea is morning is the start of the day. You either start with Hashem, or you're starting with who?
Yourself.
So therefore, you should daven in the morning. It should be the start of your day, which is going to be definitive of your day. And this is why there are all of these halachot about what you shouldn't do before you daven. What shouldn't you do before you daven in the morning? Anything. Got it? You're not supposed to do anything unless there's something that can't be done at all if you don't do it at that time. What would an example be of something that doesn't work to put off? changing the baby. Okay? Feeding the baby. Okay? If you have to put the clothes in the dryer before you leave to work, putting in the washing machine first. What could wait until later? Sewing the seam that ripped. Okay, clear? So you're supposed to begin the day with tefillah. So Maharal explains the importance of this. His vocabulary, which some of you may be familiar with, any of you who have learned Maharal, is different than other people's vocabulary. He has his own set of words that to him mean more than what they sound. One of his phrases that repeats many times in his Sfarim is the cause and the effect, the alav and the aleh. So the idea is when you begin by davening, you're saying Hashem is the cause and everything else is the effect. I'm not the cause. I'm not the one who's making things happen. Hashem is the cause. So therefore, one halacha that will keep you in kavana is doing the extraordinarily difficult self-discipline of davening before you do anything else. How many of you will find this difficult? This is very difficult for me. I do it, but it's difficult. Okay, and so I'll give you the vocabulary in case you don't have it. Just, okay. Now, again, there are things that you can't wait for. Some people can't be focused if they don't have a cup of coffee or whatever. All of that's allowed. But there's a difference between a cup of coffee and a cup of coffee plus being a magazine, a croissant, and then, okay, clear? Then checking your email. Okay, so this is that's a whole different story. Okay, so that's the idea of Shacharis. That's why the Korban Tamid was then. What was going on in the Beis HaMikdash when the second Tamid was offered, the one that's Bein HaArbayim? Which is what Mincha is about. What was going on? That was the end of the day in the Beis HaMikdash. It closed the day. But I want to make a differentiation between completion and finish. They're not the same thing. Completion means everything that had to happen happened, the circle is closing. Finish means, and now there's nothing more to do. So Mincha was the time of completion. Now, let's go into our actual lives. How many of you find it easy to make time to daven Mincha? Okay, how many of you don't find it easy to make time to daven Mincha? So I want to tell you why it's so hard for many of us. In the afternoon, what do most people do?
In the middle of their work.
You're ready? They work. Now, when you work, okay, it doesn't matter what job you have. Give me an average job. What are some things that people in this room work at? No?
Office work.
Let's say office work. So you're in an office and you're answering emails for your boss, let's say, or if you're the boss, you're answering your own emails. Everything you do when you work feels important. Could you see where this is so? Just have to finish this email. Okay. If you're teaching a class, it's important to finish the class. If you're, no matter what you're doing, presumably what you're doing feels important because you're gaining something by it or somebody is paying you for it. If they're paying for you for it, that means they think it's important. Otherwise, they wouldn't what? Pay you. If you're doing it for yourself, you think it's important because otherwise you wouldn't be doing it. What completes your day, are you ready? This is a huge idea of what tefillah is saying, okay, I'm stopping now. I am not the one who has to complete. Hashem has to complete. So I'm stopping in the middle of what I'm doing when I don't want to stop, and I'm saying, wait a minute, there's a bigger picture. So Hashem is not only the cause, he's also the effect. Okay, so I want you to think about what it's like when you can't do this, when you're only reliant on yourself. I must do this, I must do that, I must do the other. Okay, every so often we hear about terrible scandals. Is that not so? Okay, so I'm going to give you back to a familiar one. Remember years ago there was a man who was selling non-kosher meat as though it was kosher? Okay, so This is a person, you know, like it's very stylish to say, oh, he wasn't from, he just looked for. No, this is somebody he was from. For whatever reason, this person felt they had to do what they had to do, either because of financial pressure or whatever. They had to say, I have to do it. The energy of mincha is, I don't have to do it, I have to be who I am. But I don't have to do anything, because in the end, consequences belong to Hashem, efforts belong to me, but consequences don't belong to me. So this level of bitul atzmi, of negating yourself, is very difficult. Mincha is a difficult tefillah. What does the word mincha mean?
Present.
Gift, present. What are you giving? Yourself. So again, we have the problem of having kavana during mincha. It's not easy sometimes. You're at work, they only give you 10 minutes, whatever it is. Your kavana is, Hashem, I'm letting go. So if you want to not be distracted, you have to take yourself back to, and why did I stop to daven? To get out of my own sense of self-centrality. So now, before everything we said before, remember? You still remember what we said before? We're adding another thing. The halachic times of tefillah are going to make it easier for you to stay focused if you understand the purposefulness of davening at these specific times. So that means you're davening shachris, and if you could, before you even open your mouth, say, wait a minute, this is the beginning. You're davening mincha, and you stop yourself before you even start the words. You say, wait a minute, I'm letting go. That will keep your kavana straight. So that has to do with time. Okay. But in the Beis HaMikdash, that wasn't really the end of the day. Remember I said there's a difference between completion and finish? What happens at night in the Beis HaMikdash? Do any of you know?
Didn't they finish all the karbanos that had been started or prepared?
Right.
Everything had to be finished overnight before the next morning.
That's right. They had to put on whatever wasn't completely burnt back on the mizbeach, would be done by the morning. So the idea there is we never finish anything. Those of you who, like women, understand this better than men do. Okay, we never really finish. Okay, did you ever, like, I remember Erev Pesach saying, well, that's the last laundry. Okay, we never finish. Okay, they're going, you know, new socks, new underwear, new whatever, it's all there in the laundry basket by the next morning. Do you ever finish cooking? Not unless your family is going to starve.
No.
Okay, nothing is ever finished.
No.
Okay, is that true?
Yes. Yeah.
So being able to say, I've done mine, and now it's up to you, Hashem, is the statement of Ma'ariv. So women aren't obligated to daven Ma'ariv, as you know. But especially in our times, where we have, you're not going to believe me when I say this, we have more freedom over our time than people did in any previous generation. Do you realize this? It's good for women to daven Ma'ariv. When people would go to Rebbetzin Kanievsky, she would always advise that. Because Ma'ariv gives you the sensitivity of this, I didn't finish and I don't have to finish. It's up to you. Okay, so that's the halacha of time. Next, now let's look at place. So the Gemara says that a person who appoints a specific place to daven, they daven in the same place every day. So the God of Avraham will help him, and he'll be able to defeat his enemies. And when he dies, people will say, oh, what a pious person, what a humble person. That's what the Gemara says. So Maharal takes apart all of the clauses in this Gemara. First of all, what does it mean to appoint a place for tefillah? So on a simple level, that means, let's say you daven every day in the living room. So not just for change, daven in the bedroom. Okay, but have a specific place. The word for place in Hebrew, makom, it comes from the word kam. It's where you rise to do something. So when you appoint a place for anything, like the kitchen is where you prepare food, or the bathroom is where you take showers. Okay, whatever it is, you're saying this place is where I am determining my life in some way or another. Okay, you get on the train. This is how I'm getting to work. Okay, clear? So having a place to daven puts something abstract and not concrete and tangible into that same frame. This is where I relate to Hashem. So I've appointed a place for it. That means I see this just as real as a kitchen is a place to prepare food or a shower is a place to take a shower. It's real. This is a place of relating to Hashem. So what does this have to do with Avraham? Why Elokei Avraham? So the first bracha of Shemana Esrei ends with the words what? Magen Avraham. Hashem shields Avraham. It doesn't say Magen Avot. So the Midah of Avraham was what? Chesed. Chesed doesn't just mean being nice. It's one of these one-way equations. People who do Chesed are nice, but that doesn't mean that nice equals Chesed. Just like elephants are gray, that doesn't mean all gray things are elephants. What does Chesed really mean? It means going beyond yourself. So, when a baby is born, the only important person in his world is who? Himself, right? Okay, that's how babies start out. Even mommy is just like a faithful servant. Okay? So, by the time you're, let's say, 10, how many people are in that little circle? There's mommy. Depending on how often daddy is home, there might be daddy, some siblings, friends, maybe a couple of relatives, maybe a teacher or so. So I'd say for the average 10-year-old, when they say the word I includes maybe 10 people. Could that be? Okay, so now, be honest for a minute, then you can go back to being your usual defensive selves. I'll give you 30 seconds to think about this. I want you to think about this. How many people really are in your inner circle that when you say I, it has to include them as well? 30 seconds to think about this. Okay, you're there?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, there's you. Okay, some of us move beyond infancy, some, okay, whatever. So, the real tzaddikim have very big circles, very inclusive circles. Could you see where this is so? I heard a maisa that moved me very deeply. I just heard this week. So, you're all familiar with the terrible massacre that took place in Hebron in 1929, right? So, it was on a Friday, and the Arabs started a rumor that the Jews were destroying the mosque on Harabayit, and that led to pre-planned rioting. Okay, and it was very vicious and very horrific. And for various reasons, the Rosh Yeshiva was not in Hebron the day of the massacre. So people had to tell him. Could you imagine what that is? So he was actually sitting with Rav Kook at the time. The Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron, they were close to Rav Kook. So Rav Sarna, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of, the original Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron in Yerushalayim, told this story. He said he was there, he was just a young man then, when the Shluchim came to tell the Rosh Yeshiva what happened. So Rav Kook fainted, and his health was never the same afterwards. And the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron said, and this is, remember, he was weeping, he tore his clothes, but he said, I knew the Bacharim. I knew them by name. They were part of my heart. He didn't even know their names, but he had such a big circle. You understand this? So having a big circle is what Chesed is about. Avraham brought the concept of having a big circle back into the world. Hashem is connected to everyone and everything. A Baal Chesed is similarly connected to as many people who are not Hashem as we could reach out towards. So the first bracha, Magen Avraham, is Hashem guards this trait within us. So what does this have to do with having a place for tefillah? When you have a place for tefillah, what you're saying in essence is, wherever I go, Hashem, you're my place. I'm taking this place with me. So the result, we're still taking apart the same Gemara. Hashem will cause a person's like that enemies to fall before them. What does one thing have to do with another? So it says, Olam chesed yibaneh, the world was created so we could do chesed. Hashem won't let that be defeated. And finally, it says, and when a person like that dies, people will say, hey chassid, hey anav, this was the pious person, this was the humble person, because they had room for Hashem. So you may be asking very reasonably, what does this have to do with me? I'm not Avraham. So what this has to do with you is that the purpose of tefillah is what? To broaden your circle. So when you have a place for tefillah, this is your place for broadening your circle. So tefillah begins with the first three brachot, where you put Hashem into your center. And then the ikkar of tefillah is the requests. I don't know if you know this or not. That's the ikkar. With every request for da'at, for tshuva, your intent isn't give me this because it makes me feel good. Give me this because I want to broaden my circle. I want to have da'at to know how to find you in this world. I want to have tshuva so I don't block myself and other people don't block themselves. I want refuah because without a healthy body, what could you do and who could you be? I need parnasa because without parnasa, how could I sustain myself, sustain others? You understand this? So everything in tefillah is to bring you back to the place of Magen Avraham. And the way you do this is through establishing a place to daven. This is clear? Okay, last thing. I told you that this would be the last thing, but you know me already. I say it, and now in conclusion 50 times before I finish. Okay, so...
Physically a place.
Okay, so the last thing is Shemona Esra, which is again the ikra of tefillah, what Chazal say when they mean tefillah. You're supposed to say it standing and not moving about. And quietly. What's that about and how does that help you stay in Kavana? Quite the opposite. You have the rule. The reason why you would say Yehei Shmei Rabba out loud is because your voice sometimes wakes you up, right? So why is Shemona Esra so quiet? So the idea of standing in one place and davening quietly and bowing, they all have the same thing. It's negating yourself before Hashem. I don't want to hear my voice, I want to hear your voice. The voice I hear when I put myself in a place of dependency upon you. I don't feel that I can conquer the world by going here and going there. I'm going to stand in one place. Okay, bowing. The bowing has to do with negating your will before Hashem. So this is how you stay in Kavana, which means if you lose Kavana, so go back to it when you bow. You lose Kavana, go back to it when you request. You lose Kavana, you now have a whole formula of how to come back to it. Okay, so now I'll stop. If you have questions about how to maintain Kavana, the time is now. Okay, so Mincha is saying, I've completed what I have to do because I've made efforts, and now you'll give it Shlemus. The Haktaras Hevarim is saying, there are things that are unfinished. I'm never going to complete everything. You have to complete things. So it's an acknowledgement that no human being ever really completes anything.
So
that's, again, there are two different things. Mincha is saying, I did make it whole. Mayrav is saying, haha, I thought I did, but really I didn't do. Nothing is whole, and nothing has to be whole. I want to illustrate this picture of nothing has to be whole. It's a very important picture. Okay, So let's say, for instance, you accomplish something. What would you consider to be a major accomplishment? What?
Making Pesach.
Making Pesach. Okay. Okay. You make Pesach. You got the whole house clean. You didn't have any little surprises at Bedikas Chametz. Did you ever have a surprise at Bedikas Chametz? Yeah, that's like no surprises at Bedikas Chametz. You did it. But you know what? There's going to be Pesach again next year. Okay, clear? So even if you did it right, it's not the end of the story. The story doesn't end. I'm going to give you an illustration of this that also in its time moved me very deeply. So during the time of the expulsion from Gush Katif, I couldn't get enough of watching what was happening. I felt myself there very much. I wanted, like, it was very addictive. It was very, you know. So I was watching this, and I saw, among the things that I saw, many of the people left when they knew that they knew it was over, so they left on buses beforehand. But some of the people felt that they're not going to go willingly. They have to be taken out. So one of the clips that moved me, now the soldiers are human beings, remember. How old are the soldiers? 18, 19, 20, that's, they're young. And an 18-year-old boy is like a 15-year-old girl. Remember this. Okay, so I think one of the great miracles in Israel, by the way, is that B'cholof, and I've never heard of anyone in the army, a soldier killing another soldier in a fight. I think it's a miracle that you give boys that age weapons and that, like, you know, whatever. But in any case, so they're there, and the soldiers were very frustrated because nobody likes the role of bad guy, okay? So they were taking a family out of the house. The mother and all of the children except one 10-year-old boy had already gone on the buses. So it was only the father and a 10-year-old boy. And the soldiers were dragging them out of the house. And because the soldiers were frustrated, not because they were evil, they were just frustrated. Okay, so one of them said to the father, look, you lost, let go already. You know, he didn't want to drag him. And the boy was looking at the father. And the father said, and I will never forget this, we lost the battle. Then he turned towards his son and he said, you'll always remember, though, that we fought shoulder to shoulder for Eretz Yisrael. So it didn't matter that the battle was lost. It mattered who they were at the moment. You understand this? Because in the end, battles are won and battles are lost. What matters is who you are at the moment. Because we never finish anything. The completion of all things will be only when Mashiach comes. At that point, then we have the completion. Then we have the shlemus. Until then, we don't. So there has to be an acknowledgement that we don't finish anything. So part of tefillah is that we be zochet to live in the moment as we should. So think about the requests in tefillah. You ask for das. Are you ever going to know everything? No. But you ask Hashem that you have the knowledge to know what you have to know now in your life. Okay, you ask for refuah. No matter who you're davening for, are they going to live forever? No. But it's important that you ask for the refuah for now. You understand this? So this is where this goes. Tov?
What? What about the completion with mincha when you can't make mincha, but you want to make mincha?
So in mincha, what you're saying is, I did what I can do. Okay. But Myriv is saying by definition it's not finished. Okay. Okay, yeah? I don't hear you.
I miss the connection between Makom Kavua and Chesed.
So Makom Kavua means that you're saying, here's where I have a relationship to Hashem. The first person to have a meaningful relationship to Hashem that took something out of himself that wasn't a gift was Avraham. So by his acts of chesed, he turned the world into a place for Hashem. So the connection between chesed and place, which I didn't stress in the shiur, so it's good that you asked, is that you're taking what Hashem presents, which is the world, and making it a place for him. And this is what's meant by the pasuk, Olam chesed yibaneh. Going once. Okay, yeah?
What's the definition of completion versus
The definition of completion within what?
As opposed to finishing.
So completion is honestly saying I did what I can. Okay? Not finishing means even if I did what I can right, I did everything right. There's a bigger picture, and that picture is not finished till Mashiach comes.
Can you talk a little bit about the sparks that we pick?
What about it?
I just want to know a little more about it.
So you have, let's say you get up in the morning tomorrow morning, and let's say before you daven, you're having a coffee. So here's animal coffee drinking. Oh, morning. 7 o'clock. I can't believe it. Bathroom dressed. Okay. Coffee. You make yourself a coffee. Mumble a bracha. Okay. That's one. That's method A. How many of you are familiar with method A? Method A. Here's method B. Get up. 7 o'clock. Okay. I have things to do. I have to do something with my life. The day is a gift. Coffee. Thank you. Without coffee, how would I manage? So at that point, you've brought Hashem into the experience. That's called finding the spark of Kedusha, since the coffee is a gift.
Jesus is like, yay, good morning!
That's even better. Okay, for sure. For sure. You know, you read in Tehillim, David would say, I can't wake up at Yira Shachar. I'll wake up the morning. Okay, yeah? Okay, yeah?
Maybe I misunderstood something because it seemed dichotomous. When you were discussing the sparks, you said that as people age, they have less energy because they really have less to accomplish. But on the other hand, you said that, I thought you said older, tzaddikim are energized because of all the sparks they've been
right.
So
again, there's the energy that's sort of in the bank that keeps them going into old age. But even the older tzaddikim don't have new things to continue accomplishing, which is why physically they don't have the energy that they had when they were young.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me.
Okay.
I don't think you need to be a big tzaddik. If you wake up in the morning and you read that thing that you did before, that can do something good, it gives you such energy.
Yes.
That can do something good.
Yes.
That energy gives you...
Yes, she's on track. Yes.
Not today. Not based on the test, like yesterday or last week. Oh,
yes, yes, and today also.
And it gives me just, Hashem, I guess, it comes from upstairs.
Yes, yes.
I can do something good.
Yes. That's great.
What about the constant daily struggle of when it's often close, and not to make it easier, but during like, especially the winter months where you're working or taking care of your kid, and
you're
forced to that choice.
Okay, so you have halachas. So if you have to take care of your kids, you have to take care of your kids, and that comes first because you have a rule. If there's a mitzvah only you could do, that comes before other things. However, having said that, okay, if you want to daven and you have kids, you have to figure out when the best time is beforehand, rather than just like waiting for it to happen. No, that's what I'm saying. So maybe you should make a kfiyas if your kids come home from school at, let's say, 3 or 4, that you daven mincha at 1. Okay. What? So in work, there's always some break time. So if you have a break time in the afternoon, that's the best time for mincha. Okay, don't make your time for davening mincha when you're with the kids. It's like, then you'll end up like with all of these, mommy, and you look at the kid, you just made the mistake, you look, which they hear is, they understand that to mean what, and then you hear these mysterious half sentences. He did it. Who's he? What did he do? You know? Okay. Or it broke. Like it's just like not. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And just going back to the sparks, you touched on it. You missed an opportunity. She's happening every second, basically.
I'm missing it.
Okay, so...
So it's not legal. We're damaging ourselves because we...
Because we lose awareness.
Because we lost the awareness.
Yeah. So this is why there are Gilgulim until Mashiach comes. This is,
it's like an act of losing.
It's not passive.
It's not just because we need to do something.
Right. Okay, wait, don't leave yet. Wait. My tzedakah envelopes, okay? As you know, whenever I come to, where did they go? Right, here's one, okay. And here's another, and I'm missing one. Do any of you see it?
It's
near the water bottle. Right here. Okay, so I have three envelopes today. Three! Look at that upper... Okay. So this one, there's a family that is poor. They allowed me to collect on the condition I give no information about them. So it just says poor family. I'm not giving you any information about them. That's envelope one. You want to pass this? Here is envelope two. In Kiryat Sefer, there's a program for boys during Ben Hazmanim and after school. Why is that necessary? They're in school all day. The reason is that these programs are there to motivate the boys. They bring them people who are exemplary. It keeps them idealistic. So this is for that. Okay? And the last one is for the Kolom Mishnah Berurah that my family started after my husband was Nifter. If any of you would be interested in it, besides giving whatever you want to give, the possibility of entering a halachically binding Yisachar Zavulun agreement, so somebody is learning Mishnah Berurah and it's as though you're learning it, is also possible. You could speak to me about it afterwards. And the reason I'm not collecting for Neve Kalas isn't that last time there were no Neve Kalas, so I didn't collect. There is a Kala now, but the present Kala has money. Such things happen.
I'm a fan of yours.
Hi.
And she has a lot of kavan and davening, and she's exemplary. And she loves the seminary.
Yeah.